And so, hey, welcome back to the Dave Good Show. I am not sure how weird this is going to be. I mean, I'm feeling kind of weird, you know? I bet you are feeling weird too, you know? So, we had some kind of like protocols that we would go through. Now, protocol kind of means something different, but anyways, in terms of like podcast talk, I'm doing this outside right now. We're doing this in Patrick's yard. And I kind of wish that I had like a plexiglass box. I think that's what I'm like looking forward to in the future, is just like a podcast box that I can just like set up and that I can keep all of my expectorations in the box. You know, I can like sanitize my box. You put it on wheels and you just like wheel me wherever you need to go. People could put their hands on the box, but in the meantime, I'm doing this outside. And I'm in South Minneapolis, which became an international story. So, you know, I mean, I drove past burned down buildings today as I went to pick up a camping chair for my friend. And, you know, it's weird. Today I didn't even really see him. You know, I've already become like eye fatigued by the destruction, you know, but that's real. And the uprising, a friend of mine used that word. I like that word. It kind of like includes all the things. It led me to some uncomfortable conversations, you know. I mean, I watched this show on the Hill Network called Rising with Crystal and Sagar. I like highly recommend it. It's a lot of conservative people will tell you that's the only liberal perspective they kind of get and like, and liberal people would say the same. I really like the show. It's like a populist politics show, but even these like this conservative and this liberal who kind of like made this new treaty in the new times, basically they're like, we're going to hate the corporate structure that fucks with us more than we hate each other. There's like a pact that they made. They had a tough time with the Minneapolis stories, you know, like there were some fights. And so, I don't know. I mean, the Dave Good Show is for everybody. And so, and this is like not my political show, you know, I'm political in my life. You know, so, anyways, like, I've been thinking about that. I feel like my podcast kind of relates to that kind of thing, but I'm also want to talk about isolation, you know, which, is something that we all just kind of went through. And like, I've said this in previous shows, but, you know, memory is really important, and I want to remember, you know, that time. And so like from Cinco de Mayo on, I remember things, right? Because Cinco de Mayo is when I met my pandemic girlfriend, right? And when I met her, then like from that point, I have a timeline, you know? There's like the 9 hours of Zoom and phone calls, and then like the decision to meet outdoors, and like how that felt like fucking fear and loathing in Las Vegas. Like I was just like hallucinating from being in contact with another human, let alone like a pretty lady I'm on a date with. Like it was intense. But the time from March 17th to May 5th is totally different, right? Like that's like this like ocean of emotion and like internal rumblings and just like fucked up shit, you know? Like, I mean, there are moments of pure terror. I remember like 5 days in when I got like heartburn from eating nothing but chicken wings, because somehow that was like giving me comfort. I like found comfort in the chicken wing. And then I got heartburn and didn't like know how to deal with it. And like any time you get sick, you're like worried that you've caught this terrible virus. And at that time we understood it even, you know, less than we poorly understand it now. And I mean, that's what's funny. Like, that's what clicked with me and my pandemic girlfriend is our ability to, like, read graphs. Like, that was the most attractive quality in a human being at that time, with someone who could, like, interpret data and probability. So, anyways, but it was deep. I mean, I know one time I put on Facebook, like, my apartment is a tiny boat and my mind is a vast ocean, you know? So I was deep into myself. I know that. I was scared, like we all were. And I do well with isolation, right? Like, I'm eye-rolling as I say this, but I'm an introverted extrovert. I fucking, like, hate how that became hip, but... I mean, honestly, a lot of my closest friends are that way. I like to get out and put on a show, but I'm cool by myself, you know? But this was a whole new level of by myself. And I'm sure, like a lot of us, I went deep into my entire life and I thought about the last time that I felt that lonely, you know? And it's funny, I talked to my brother about it and he felt the same way. I don't know. I mean, if you're like a hardcore Dave Goodshow fan and if you've listened to every single podcast... So this one person, I'm talking to you. I had my brother on one time and he asked me a very strange question. He said, why did you, I was like, so Brian, why don't you ask me something? Why don't you interview me for the podcast? You know, this would be funny. And he was like, how come you saw our parents' divorce coming and I did not? You know, Patrick was like, whoa. And I was like, I don't want to talk about family on the podcast, which is a rule. It's one of my rules. If you're wondering what I'm drinking a Whole Foods Coke. It is delicious. And anyways, so I had this discussion about, I had this internal and external discussion about not talking about my family on the podcast. Right. I know that David Sedaris has like caused major rifts in his family life by telling these stories. And so I want to hold true to that, but I also want to tell this like kind of like series of vignette stories in the proper context. And I just want to tell the truth of the moment. And so I had moved to St. Louis. You know, I make fun of St. Louis a lot and I had kind of a rough time there, and really that's all related to this, because right after I'd transferred universities, went to school there, and I had been there for one semester, and my parents got divorced, right? And like, I've got no, it was a really messy time, you know? I've forgiven them for the things that happened. I hope they've forgiven me. I know my family has a lot of associated pain around this time, you know? It was a shit show with no one to blame. But somehow, me, rich kid Dave in St. Louis, I'm not rich kid, whatever, upper, depending on your definition of rich, that's like a whole LA thing, like going to LA and saying, like, I'm the son of a prominent Iowa dentist, like that doesn't hold a lot of cred in Malibu, you know? So, anyways, they got divorced and all of my finances got fucked up, right? And so like suddenly I had to get a job right away because of the general shit show, you know? And I internalized this experience of like, I was too entitled, right? I should have been able to go out and get a job right away, pay my bills, pull myself up by my bootstraps, right? And you know, it was pretty fucked. I was in a new city. I didn't know anyone. I ate chili dogs for 2 weeks. You know, I remember going to a convenience store and buying two Budweiser Tall Boys and a pack of Camel Lights with dimes, you know, and like pushing those dimes to that cashier and having that cashier eye roll at me and be like, I know what you are. And me being like, you know. And by the way, like that neighborhood I was in St. Louis, buying those beers and Camel Lights with dimes at midnight, like not really the safest place I could have been, you know? So anyways, I had to get a job, and I got this job raising money for a environmental organization. That shit job, you know, when you see people with clipboards outside of the grocery store and fucking that terrible job, but I got it and I was good at it, you know? And honestly, I didn't know what the fuck was going on. So I'm saying, it was a loneliness and isolation akin to a pandemic. I was just awash in 22-year-old Dave Good. But anyways, I was good at it, you know? And I mean, I had a ponytail. I was 22. I was in good shape. I was a snack, you know, knocking on doors. And so they start having me train people, right? And I get my first, I don't know if this is my first trainee, but I remember this trainee, and I've changed her name to protect the innocent, but her name was Shakira. And Shakira was not a young black woman. Shakira was a black teenager, right? I mean, because we'd hire anyone for the job. I think she was maybe 16. But Shakira did not look 16, you know? And Shakira looked like she was about ready to star in the next R. Kelly video, you know? And she said, she took one look at me and she said, I had never fucked no white boy before and you look like Brad Pitt. And I, of course, was horrified by the fact that she spoke a double negative, you know? And I proceeded to train Shakira. And I mean, she had no interest in the job, you know, and she hit on me the whole time, which for me was like terrifying and hugely inappropriate, you know, but I tried to like weather it and like turn it into positive things, you know, and kind of gently explain to her that if you can do anything in this world other than this job, you should do that, you know. And it's like we drive people out to where you do the canvassing and I were driving back. And we come to a stoplight in St. Louis, in University City, which is one of those neighborhoods that kind of like bridges the gap between a lot of different racial and ethnic groups. And there's this rib restaurant, the St. Louis Rib Company. And we pull up and there's a stoplight. And I'm at the stoplight with Shakira in the front seat. And I look and there's this man he's got like a apron on and he's got like, there's like kind of some like blood or grease and stuff on the apron. And he's holding like a meat cleaver, like a real meat cleaver. And he's talking outside of his rib shop, you know? And I am staring at him in the rib shop thinking like, one, I bet those ribs are good. But also two, like, this is a whole new experience for me. Like, I haven't been around a lot of black people before. Here's like a black man who runs a meat shop. I haven't seen a lot of meat cleavers before, you know, and he turns and he looks at me and he sees me staring at him with a hot black teenager in the front seat. And he is like, fuck you, motherfucker. And he starts walking into the street with his meat cleaver. And I'm just like, please turn light, please turn, please turn, please turn. And the light like turns to green and I like speed off. I take Shakira back to the office and she's like, I'm so impressed that you didn't try to fight that guy. Like, normally the guys I'm with, they'd like be, you know, anyways. And so she did not come back. And I guess I could have had a certain takeaway from that kind of experience. But like right soon after that, I trained another black teenager, a dude named like DJ or TJ or RJ, two syllable, two letter thing. And he was like a band nerd, you know, like a very sweet guy who was very into drums, but not like in a cool way, in like a band nerd way. And we went canvassing in suburban St. Louis and people would not open their fucking doors, right? Which one was like horrific for me because I'm like experiencing racism, but I'm like equally as mad that I can't raise any fucking money, you know? So I'm like mad both about racism, but also mad that like, I just like remember this, like people would not open their doors. Whereas like, I could always like, I would knock on every door three times. Like I'd get them to come to the door, but they wouldn't open their door. And it's like this one woman like had the door pushed open with like the chain. And she was like yelling, like, get the fuck out of here. Like viciously. And it was like, she was like a Komodo dragon, like with like a forked tongue, just like, blah, 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 like sticking out of this door. It was fucking horrific. And I felt very bad for DJ TJ, you know? And so anyways, the job sucked, you know? And that problem continued, that I was so good at training, and every time I trained somebody black, I would have a shit day. And if I didn't make my commission, I would get paid like $3 an hour. So it sucked. And we went to the same deli like every day. And so I got a job at this deli, right? And this is like a hippie deli. It's like a hippie deli. And, you know, it paid shit, whatever. Same as the previous job. But, you know, I just got to eat a lot of burritos. It's where I learned to skillfully wrap a burrito. And one day I'm working in this deli. And a black man walks in with like a clipboard. And he's wearing FUBU, right? Which is for us, by us. For those of you who don't know. He's wearing all red. Red shoes, red pants, red. And then the piece de resistance. He's got the flat billed cap on, right? And like nothing is funnier to me about like fashion racism than like the white opposition to the flat billed cap. Like it's just funny, you know? Like I'm wearing a hat right now and I'm very conscious of in Minneapolis that I want to like get this hat wet. I want to work it around. Like it's too angular at the moment, but like some people like to keep their caps fresh, you know, they might even keep the tag on it, but like, you know, there's just a real opposition to the flat billed cap. And so this man with the clipboard and the all red and the FUBU is standing there, and my boss is there, and he's like, I don't want any. And the guy's like, excuse me, you know? And he's like, you know what, man, I don't want any, you know? And the guy's just like, gives him a quizzical look and remains in line, you know? And then my boss like walks right up to him and is like, I do not, whatever you're selling, I do not want it. And this man says, sir, I am the fire inspector. It was like one of the greatest moments of my life. And man, that guy just like pulled out his pen and was just like, you know, so I mean, that was St. Louis. Like, St. Louis, it was like, I really, like, that's like, I don't want to talk about racism in Minneapolis right now, you know? I'm a little bit, so talking about St. Louis, you know, talking about a different place and my perceptions there. You know, another thing about that job is I worked with this guy, Joe, who was from Georgia. And Joe and I became friends. And I realized through Joe that I had, like, a real prejudice about the South. You know, like I didn't like the South. I thought they were all racist. I thought they were all stupid, you know. And Joe was like hilarious. He was like, Dave, you don't like smoking weed and drinking beer and sitting on a porch, you know? Like, he's like, that's what we do all day, you know? He's like, we think you guys are all like, you know, trying to do shit all the time, racing to a red light, you know? So I became friends with Joe, you know, again, but then this whole time, like feeling broke, feeling tired from jobs, like feeling that was my entitlement, you know, that was the problem. I felt bad about myself still, you know, that summer of alone. And, you know, so anyways, I flipped that job into a job at a movie theater in a 5-star hotel, right? That I got from school. Right. Because by this time I was doing really well in school, as you do when you have no friends, you know, all of my relationships were with my teachers, you know. And so I get this job at the Chase Park Plaza Hotel in the movie theater. And I smoke cigarettes, you know, and this is another subversive story because like it's where I got something really positive out of smoking cigarettes, you know. But I would go and smoke cigarettes in the parking garage where everyone from that hotel would smoke cigarettes, right? And I don't know if you've ever worked in a hotel or what people know about hotels, but like that's a real like you get the full range in a hotel, you know? And so this was a hotel with full banquet facilities, banquet rooms, et cetera. And so, and this is like a real window into like straight up like segregation, because like all the cooks were black, all of them, all the cooks, all the banquet servers, the entire team, black. And I'd be out there smoking cigarettes and they would all be talking to each other. And I could not understand a word, the motherfucking word they were motherfucking saying, right? Like the dialect, the St. Louis, like urban dialect was so thick, I couldn't understand, you know? But I like liked hearing people talking and having a good time, you know? I mean, I think we've kind of learned in this pandemic that that's a really beautiful sound, you know? And I was just sit there and I'd smoke, I'd listen, you know, and then I realized, I'm like, this is like fucking My Fair Lady. I just had this thought smoking cigarettes where like, they're like, she speaks Cockney and we don't like it. And there's like that famous scene where she like yells at the horse to move his bloody ass. And everyone's like, oh, you know, and I'm like those assholes in My Fair Lady. Anyways, over time, I learned to understand them, you know, and my buddy Dave, who's funny because he looks like a giant Nazi, and he's one of the least, just the most open and loving people I've ever met, you know. And he kind of taught me that even though these mostly men cooks were speaking a language I didn't understand, they could understand my language, you know. And slowly we became friends, you know. And even one time, this guy walked up to me and was like, hey man, do you by chance like Megadeth and Slayer, you know, because I had long hair? And I was like, no. And he's just like, god damn it, I love that shit. And I was just like hoping you were going to like it, you know. So anyways, over like some period of time, I came to be accepted by these men, you know. They became my friends, you know, and we liked smoking weed. They had a lot better weed than I did, a lot cheaper, a lot better. Started getting weed from them, you know. And then because it was awesome because they worked in the banquet. For those of you who know who have nudge worked around banquet rooms, you can score like 7 filet mignon some night, you know. So they would like hook me up with steaks, and then they would bring their girlfriends to the movies, and I would give them like the VIP treatment, right? You know, which here we are years later. I'm still better. I was better at that then than most people are now, and I'm still better at that shit, you know? So it became like really powerful. They learned that I was from Iowa. So they asked me about wrestling and they asked me about basketball, right? Which were astute, you know, questions. And like, they like accepted me, you know? So then it was like my network kind of fanned out. Now I like knew Black St. Louis a little bit. And I'm still friends with Joe from the deli, the guy from Georgia. And Joe, you know, I'm a real rule follower. Joe was not. And he figured out something awesome, which was we could break. He did it. There was this school that was covered on all sides with buildings, trees, whatever. There was like a playground in the middle with a basketball hoop. And Joe and his buddies figured out that you could crawl into that school, and they parked 2 buses, school buses, on the basketball court to keep you from playing on that court, you know? And they figured out that you could get into those buses really easy, and you could shift them into neutral, and we could push them out of the way. So then there was a lit basketball court at night, right? And we would go there and play basketball, you know, a bunch of hippies. Man, and it was great. Like, I was always a choke artist when I was younger, you know? But I did a lot of basketball camp. I played a lot of basketball. And, like, now I'm, like, 23. I'm not afraid anymore, you know, like I was then. And, man, I just light it up on that court, you know? They can't beat me, horse, whatever. It's beautiful. Just rain in threes. God, the sound of a basketball going through a hoop on like a still St. Louis night. I mean, that shit is incredible. And so Joe, though, lives in Black Webster Groves, right? Webster is where I go to college. Fun fact about Webster Groves, Missouri, is it has an exact demographic breakdown the same as America. They've like made movies about it, but like the percentages of, you know, Christians, Jews, Muslims, African Americans, Latinos, etc., like at that time mirrored America completely. And Joe lived in the black part of town, you know, and even though I didn't work at that deli anymore, I would still go there to smoke weed, right? And one time there, he's smoking weed with a bunch of young black men. And they're like, Dave, we heard that you can ball, man. We heard you can ball, you know? And I was like, yeah, I mean, kind of, you know, I mean, I got a pull up jumper and I got a turnaround, you know? And they're like, that's all you need, Dave. You know, that's all you need, you know? And we started to talk and they were like, how come you never played like high school ball or college ball? Like, what happened? You know, what happened to you? I know what happened to me, you know, and they'd go down like, I blew my knee out. And when I was 14, I was all state, did it, you know, and like each one, it was like this like song by verse, you know, and I was kind of like, whatever, you know, and then it was like, shit, I never got put on that AAU team. And they're like, you never got put on that AAU team, you know, and like, I cannot tell you how good that felt, you know, to feel that love and have them talking to me like, you know, I could have been a college basketball player, you know. And so we like got to talking and I was like, you know, I just like feel bad all the time, you know, that I grew up with all of this privilege, right? I've seen St. Louis now. I've seen the environments that people live in here, you know. And like, I just feel so guilty about it, you know? I mean, not guilty, I just feel bad, you know? And they're like, don't feel bad, man, you know? Like, use what you got, you know? Just use what you got. Like, you got what I want, you know? But don't feel bad about it. I wouldn't feel bad about it, you know? And like, in that moment, I was like healed, you know? All this pain from that divorce, all this pain about being entitled and, you know, not being able to roll with this major disruption to my life is some kind of weakness, you know, I like, you know, it's like the black community of St. Louis means a lot to me, you know. And so like when I've been thinking a lot deep in the pandemic, like, what do we see when we see, you know? Like, because we look at the same things and we see different things, you know? We see a building burn, we see different things. We see a protest, we see different things, you know? But like, when I see black men, I think about those men in St. Louis, you know? And like, what they did for me. You know, which was a lot, you know, I mean, I'm cool to this day because of them. Like, I'm cool, you know, you can't take that away from me. You know, it's in there. When I met Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, like, I already knew I was cool from St. Louis before becoming, they made me a little bit cooler, but, you know. So, here's what I've been thinking about in context of that, in context of what's happening in the world. You know, Anthony Bourdain one time said that the number one job of someone in prison is cook, right? And like, I've worked around cooks, you know, you work around cooks, you're going to find some dudes who maybe got in a fight, you know, maybe jacked a car, maybe did some shit, you know, and so there's this attitude that has, what's the word, fomented in America over time that if, like, you're 22 and you rob a liquor store, you should be fucked for the rest of your life, you know? You should never get a good job. You shouldn't be able to vote, you know? All this shit. What, you know, everyone always talking about people's criminal records, you know? I mean, in present company excluded, but aren't you precious? You know, oh, you never hung out with anyone who ever broke the law, you know? My buddy in St. Louis, the boxer, the most generous man, you know, who introduced me to those people. One time he was lifting weights in a park and some guy looked at him funny and he kicked the shit out of that dude. He kicked the shit out of the dude for a stranger in a park, you know? And he got in trouble and he went to therapy and he found boxing. He found an outlet for his aggression and he became a stellar dude, you know? But there's this American attitude that because of, you know, like our brains aren't even fucking fully formed when we're 22, you know? They're not even formed when we're fucking 27, you know? And I'm just like, it's just fucking disgusting, you know? I mean, whatever, say what you want about the parallel, but if like you can say like I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die, if you can love that song, you know, but you get, you know, precious about hip hop or I just, it's very upsetting to me, you know, that once you serve your time, that's it, you know, like it's, yeah, it's fucking, if I was working at a convenience store and some guy stuck a gun on my face, that would be terrifying, you know, but I have had a gun stuck in my face before. It was terrifying, but I got over it, right? I don't think the men who stuck that gun in my face deserve to sacrifice their future from that moment, you know? And there's this attitude about that. And like what that is rooted in is they can't imagine a world where someone who held up a liquor store could have positively contributed to their life in some kind of greater sense, you know? I don't know the criminal record of every dude I hung out with in St. Louis during that time. I mean, I hung out with guys, white, black, whatever, who smoked crack, who sold drugs, who got in bar fights, who crashed their cars into buildings, you know? They're human beings, you know? And we just, we write people off and it's fucking disgusting, you know? And it's embarrassing. And, you know, like, I mean, I got a little bit of outlaw blood in me. I know my family. We got some outlaw blood. Outlaws are a good fucking time, you know? Outlaws make good music. So, you know, I'm very grateful to St. Louis, you know, for that. And honestly, I got fucked over by everybody in St. Louis, top to bottom in that town. Government officials, academics, fucking everybody, nonprofits, too many to count. I never got fucked over by those cooks, you know? Something to be said for integrity. So, anyways, I mean, that's my story. I didn't want to, like, get too into the, I mean, these are heavy times, so I know that's like kind of a heavy story. I tried to work some jokes in there, you know, but don't worry. I've got like a hopeful conclusion. And I think that the thing about the pandemic and the isolation is, and I hope that we come to this realization, but like, all the greatest things are everybody together, you know? The state fair is awesome because it's everybody together, you know? Rock concerts, everybody together. Sporting events, everybody together, you know? Like all of us in the same space, enjoying the same thing. Like that is like such a great feeling, you know? And the malaise that we're all feeling, the like general shittiness that I feel, the fact that I'm eating Lay's potato chips and drinking fucking Cokes, you know, is from being away from that, you know? Just we all matter, and all of us together enjoying each other is like, there are a few things in this world more beautiful than that.
been listening to The Dave Good Show.